Welcome to Bleeding Edge Season 2. I'm Bethann Stubbe, ILTA's Director of Publications and Press. And in this ILTA podcast series, we chat with various subject matter experts about the latest trends and news in the legal technology community. Okay, let's meet who we're chatting with today.
I am thrilled for Season 2 to welcome our hostess with mostest, Cindy McBean. Cindy is the litigation support manager at Hahnemann. And moreover, we are thrilled to welcome Jeff Pfeiffer, who is the Chief Product Officer in North America at LexisNexis. Before we start speaking today, I want to thank you both for joining me. And Cindy, I know we want to start off with some lifecycle questions. So can we give it a start there?
Certainly. I wanted to lead off with, you know, just kind of a background to what is technology product design.
Absolutely. And first, let me say it's great to be with you both. I love the podcast and look forward to sharing a few ideas today that hopefully might be helpful to listeners. When we think about life cycle, we really think about two distinct phases, a phase up front, which is really centered in problem understanding, and a second phase, which is really about problem ideation and solutioning. So when we put the two phases together, essentially, we think about a phase up front where attorneys, legal professionals, many in law firms and in-house counsel departments are exploring areas where there's pain, where there are things that don't work very well. And frankly, we advise and suggest that most time should be spent in that phase. People tend to think about life cycle, I think, more in the second phase, where we're designing and creating solutions. And there are some great techniques for that that I'm sure we can explore today. But I guess broadly, I would describe those two categories as the way generally we think about overall product design.
Thank you. That was very informative. And, you know, my specialty is litigation support. So I'm all about understanding problems first, because oftentimes I get just a vague end result and I kind of need to walk it back a bit. Why is soliciting attorney input and feedback important in your design versus other members of the legal teams?
Well, I think, again, related to the area we were just discussing, it does ultimately depend on the problem space. And if the problem space involves challenges that attorneys have in achieving a task or executing a client service or some other related activity, then the individuals experiencing that pain really need to be part of the process, in my view. At LexisNexis, we're big believers in the Clayton Christensen jobs to be done framework. And essentially that analyzes what an individual is doing day in and day out. And you're likely familiar with the framework, but it essentially attempts to find the biggest gaps between people's satisfaction with something today to solve a problem and what they're trying to achieve. And that's scored as an opportunity score. These are the biggest areas where there are gaps in people's satisfaction with what they have today to achieve a solution or task completion and what they would like to have. And so we find that attorneys in particular are great at offering insight into that gap analysis. So they're great at describing, this is how I do this task. This is how I do this set of activities. And overall, we think those ideas can be mapped into a broader jobs to be done framework so that individuals are able to give us insight into where the gap between how they do something today and how they'd like to be able to do it in the future is significant.
Do you have some specific examples of when you received attorney feedback or their input influenced the particular product, whether it was the design, the interface, the features, and then, you know, how the course changed over, you know, your life cycle into delivering that for them?
Definitely. So, you know, let's take a step back also and think about the kind of development that takes place. When I describe something like this jobs to be done analysis, one thing I think that's important is for people to understand at that phase, we're actually usually not talking about product. We're talking about what the problem is, what the pain point is, why it's tough to do my job with the tools that I currently have. And in that phase, attorney input is absolutely critical because that helps us really refine and define ultimately what the solution space might look like. And I mentioned earlier that we then iterate further with additional tools and techniques. A common one that we use is something called a design sprint. So after we've spent some upfront time learning about a problem space, we spend time downstream thinking about ways to solve that problem. And we actively use attorneys throughout that process in defining that greenfield space or the problem space up front, all the way through to defining the actual product solution. And what we find, again, is that individuals tend to have really strong ideas about where the problem is, what they would like to see improved, and have great ideas about how they would solve it themselves. So we use that in a variety of product engagement scenarios. So we've developed some recent features for products we've developed, like Lexus Plus as an example, which are deeply rooted in the feedback that we got directly from attorneys as we were building out new concepts and capabilities.
And then how do you typically engage with attorneys? How do you really kind of build those relationships to have an engagement with an attorney on one of your ideas or products?
Well, it's interesting. We've developed a framework for engaging with clients. And on the most simple end, it might be about a specific feature where we're looking for some very specific feedback about that idea, all the way to a new program that we actually developed over the period of coronavirus that we call Lexplore. And it is a multi-workshop session where we engage with a firm to explore a problem space. And I guess I would answer your question by saying it depends on the complexity of the problem. If we have an idea fairly well developed, that might be a good example of something where we're creating one-on-one interviews or opportunities for individuals to offer feedback. If we're exploring a problem space or something where there's not a good solution, that typically would involve multiple engagements over time. And I know from prior guests you've had on your program, obviously the coronavirus period introduced some new challenges. Doing those kinds of activities remotely was definitely a challenge early on, but frankly, it's opened the door for more people to participate. And I would say that's been really one of the significant benefits of this period is that we have more people than ever participating in these development type workshops.
Yeah, it's amazing how when you can't go in the office, how all of a sudden you can participate remotely when before it just wasn't thought of as an option. So when you solicit participants, how do you usually get their attention or how do you reach out to people and in what fashion?
Well, it's really interesting as I observe what I see going on across the country. We see great examples of firms that are explicitly focusing on innovation and concept development, independent of anything that we're trying to do. So within organizations now, we regularly see associates that are incented to participate in innovation workshops to explore methods to improve client service and delivery, to think about ways to enhance the delivery of advisory services to in-house counsel. It's really exciting for me to see that, like for years, we've had incentives for associates to participate in other activities, from pro bono activities to other activities within the firm. We now see a more explicit focus on innovation and design review. And along with that, some specific training on what that looks like. And I would say, so number one, there's a large group of firms out there that we've engaged with that are interested in exploring these ideas because they're exploring those same ideas themselves. But with others, we're starting at a different place. They're starting to think about building programs like this. And in those organizations, we'll often offer some services that help introduce basic ideas like problem space exploration or basic design workshops, and help those organizations understand how they could apply them to scenarios involving our products or any challenge that they might have in the organization.
What did innovation look like with the kind of participation you got in 2019, and how did it change in 2020? Notice I didn't use the word COVID once in that sentence, just by the way.
I heard. You know, I would say that the biggest differences over that window of time were about two things, about the areas that we explored. So first, pre-2020, we were exploring one set of problems. And from 2020 forward, we started exploring problems that were often centered around virtual collaboration and how teams engaged with one another. I would say that was fundamentally a big shift that we saw. The second, as we alluded to earlier, was in the methodology. The engagements pre-2020 were mostly in person, mostly in a conference room together. Post-2020, they're almost all virtual. And we're leveraging some new tools and some new technologies ourselves to facilitate that kind of interaction. But I would suggest that as we see firms grapple with questions like how much of an individual's percentage of time will they work in the office in the future, or how much of an individual's time will be spent working on a virtual collaboration team, that's driven a new set of capabilities in our products and in other solutions that we're developing, because we see this greater emphasis on virtual engagement and collaboration.
I'm inferring that LexisNexis really believes that virtual collaboration and just the methodologies need to grow. Are there any other causes of change or, you know, trends that you kind of see on the horizon coming at us?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think some of the trends predate that 2020 window. A greater emphasis on end-to-end analysis of workflow activities, an emphasis of automation of certain workflow activities, and ensuring, especially that attorneys are spending time in higher value activities. Those themes have all continued. What I would say really has changed is the way we're working to solve those problems, as there are new requirements that weren't there pre-2020. Additionally, I would say there have been accelerants over that window. If you look at deployments of Slack and MS Teams, for example, you know, they're off the charts now when they were really niche applications that were deployed in law firms pre-2020. And that is driving a tremendous amount of opportunity for collaboration and innovation in workspaces like that. At LexisNexis, for example, we know that a large percentage of our user base would prefer to consume information from Lexis or to get insights to legal questions in the native work environment where they are. That could be, again, Microsoft Teams, or it could be Word, or any other place that they're working natively. And so we've been working over the last 18 to 24 months in particular to build out a tool set that allows us to embed knowledge insights into those places where people are working. And I would say, as we look at the next few years in particular, we'll discuss a lot minimizing context switching, the idea that people leave one application and go to another application to do something else. The emphasis will be on that broader end-to-end workflow set of capabilities, and suppliers like LexisNexis being able to enable workflow activities from the places where people are working on a daily basis.
I cannot wait to see some of that, because that all sounds great with not having to switch around, which is always interesting. And it seems like attorneys would be lining up to be influencers. And I'm using that word for the younger crowd, because that is now a real object, is being an influencer. But, you know, why don't more attorneys participate in these kinds of activities when ultimately it would benefit them? Do you see any barriers that continue?
Well, for sure, the pressure on billable hours, it remains an overall pressure on participating in activities like this. And I think leading firms are working to set aside time for individuals to participate, because ultimately it improves the quality of the work product and the support to the end client. So number one, I would encourage every firm to think about how it incents participation in activities like this. But I also think that it's incumbent on organizers like us and others to make the process valuable and exciting. So what I mean by that is that often someone can participate in a product sharing session and maybe have a lack of an idea of how their input is used, or they may not gain broader skills that might be extendable to some other part of their workflow activities. And we really try to emphasize that. We try to think about two things. One, how do we make the overall experience one where an individual learns and develop some new skills that could be extendable? And then number two, how do we constantly circle back with individuals to let them know how we're incorporating the feedback they gave us in the overall development and design of the product? On your influencer comment, one interesting trend that I see is that many firms are indeed doing exactly what you say. They're looking for peer mentors that are examples of either the use of certain kinds of technologies or examples of how workflow activities are changing. I think of one firm in particular that's developed a set of mentors within the organization that are teaching other attorneys how things like analytics change the way attorneys process information to make strategic choices about litigation or transactional document drafting or any kind of legal task. I think too much firms often think, well, people will see the utility and the value and may not understand that people need a path. They need to be shown how to get from point A to point B. And where I see successful firms making real headway, they're leveraging a bit of a mentorship or a best practice approach. This organization I'm thinking of has a best practice university in the firm related to analytics that's designed to help everyone in the firm understand how the use of data to drive decision-making can improve the quality of the legal services that they provide.
That is very interesting to me. I don't want to make an assumption that you deal with only attorneys from large firms or small firms, but I kind of want to tie it back to what's your experience with the size of the firm in relationship to how they innovate? Because to me, if you're a smaller firm, sometimes it's easier to innovate and have, you know, dedicated resources for that. So what are you seeing in your work?
What we see is that across all firm sizes, there are common tasks, common activity that can apply to a range of scenarios. What typically differs radically is how that takes place. And to your point, a small firm, say a five attorney firm, can change its entire technology infrastructure fairly rapidly, where in a very large firm, obviously that can take years to achieve. So one thing that we see is, especially on the small firm end of the market, a significant focus on what large firms would call a cloud-first strategy. I mean, in small firms, almost everything is cloud-based. Almost everything is fairly new technology. And in those organizations, we'll spend more time exploring these pain point issues. What are the workflow challenges that you have? What are the things that you're trying to achieve? Because the challenge there is often, how do I do things as efficiently as possible in order to optimize the financial return on a legal engagement? Versus on the large end of the market, we are often talking to firms about much more complex processes involving many, many, many more people. And so I would say, you know, in both, the common themes are the same. We look at workflow, we look at how work gets done, and we try to identify these jobs to be done that are causing the most pain. And whether it's a small firm or a large firm, we'll look at where those opportunities are to optimize and improve the performance. I would say the big surprise for me over the last few years is really where in-house counsel are taking a lead on optimization of these processes, exerting much more influence over both small law firms and large law firms about how engagements take place, how workflow is organized, and what some of their expectations are on the use of and the adoption of certain types of technology.
That is really interesting and surprising to me as well. That is the end of the questions that I would have for you, but I have learned a lot about your technology product design. And I just want to thank you again for your time. It's been a pleasure meeting you and speaking with you today.
Cindy and Jeff, thank you so much. I've learned a ton about lifecycle and products. This has been really interesting. Is there anything, Jeff, that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I'd like to just share with them that I think sometimes what we talk about in today's call may seem daunting. If you haven't done it before, it may present some trepidation, if you will. And I would just suggest that if you're given the opportunity, participate in the process. You can learn a lot. You'll find out whether it's something that you enjoy doing. But I would guarantee that by participating, you'll learn quite a bit. And I would say that can apply whether it's interacting with a supplier like LexisNexis or even within your own organization. If you look at different things like client service models, to the degree you can participate in that process, be a part of the problem solving, you really can influence how the future of products and legal technology specifically, how that unfolds.
Jeff, Cindy, thank you both so very much for your time, and we'll join you next time with another episode of Bleeding Edge.
Check out more episodes and other ILTA podcasts on iltanet.org and all other podcast platforms.